I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. There's a new novel out now, Little Crosses. Its author, Sabrina Reeves, joins me to talk about the relationship of a daughter to her complicated narcissistic mother, who now lives with alcohol-related dementia. I'll ask Sabrina about Cassie Wolf and her mother, Nina, and about the struggles Cassie has in reconciling the mother she knew before dementia and the woman that is now an alcoholic. Well, she wasn't always like this, of course. She was an architect and builder, somebody with incredible charisma. We get a sense of who Nina was as Cassie sits down prior to her mother's intake at a detox facility as she writes down a sketch of who her mother was. The book touches on the relationship between parents and children, addiction, as well as grief. I'll ask Sabrina to tell us as much as she'd like about this book, and what from her personal experience might have inspired some of the novel that is Little Crosses. Sabrina Reeves is a writer, performer, and co-founder of the interdisciplinary performance collective Blue Mouth, Inc. This new book is published by House of Anansi Press. For more, visit sabrinareeves.com. We spoke about 3.5 weeks ago. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Sabrina Reeves. Ms. Reeves, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
So as the book begins, I guess the first person we meet is Cassie, and that's the daughter, Nina's daughter. Is that right?
That's right, yep.
So she finds herself in New Mexico. That's where Nina lives. Why is that?
Well, she has come to detox her mother from alcohol, essentially, after a long period of trying to help her and get her any kind of help that she can. This is where they've ended up.
And in terms of the problem with alcohol, how bad is it that the family, or she, at least Cassie, decides that something has to be done?
It's bad. It's really quite terrible. It's something that was interesting, and I find this also with the dementia aspect, that when you are going through something, you then discover how many other people have gone through it or are going through it. It's just nobody talks about it. So in the case of Nina, I'm sorry, I'm speaking in first person because a lot of this is autobiographical. So if I slip into that, I apologize. Cassie has lived with Nina, obviously, her, you know, growing up years and all of that. And as is the case with many of us, she was a couple drinks of glasses of wine a night drinker, but never during the day, never anything much beyond that, not really hard liquor. But then later in life, fell in isolation in a situation of living alone, fell into heavy drinking and drinking all day and drinking basically 24/7, sort of any moment that she was awake, until she reaches what is called the end stage, in which she has no choice left. So that's where they find themselves. And the last few years that lead up to the opening of the book are just a level of alcoholism that was never present before.
So as the book starts, she's almost, she has to take the mother from where she lives to this facility. I forget what it's referred to.
Meadowbrook?
A secured memory unit, is that right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of cloak and dagger stuff, sort of, you know, like tricking is not the right word, but trying to get, but not telling her where exactly they're going. So she's saying that they're going to look after her knee, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tricking is pretty pretty accurate.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, it feels like that, even though it's compassionate.
Yeah. So she has no. Does the mother have no conception of how bad the problem is, or is that because of the dementia?
Well, she has no real conception of it. One of the curious things that we discovered in this process is that the memory loss, was almost as if she had, in hiding her drinking from everyone else, she had hidden it from herself, in the sense of, even if she was drinking a case of wine every 2 days, she wouldn't go buy a case of wine because she doesn't realize she needs a case of wine. She'd go buy a couple bottles and then get to the end, and at a certain point she was saying, I think someone's stealing from me because I had three bottles of wine and they're not here, and not realize that she was the one who drank them. So the memory loss kind of colludes with the drinking and creates this, cruel situation even for her. The other thing that we learned in the process is that you can't just detox a person. You have to get guardianship of somebody, and they have to be at a certain state for that to happen. And it's a long process, a court process that just takes a lot of time. And so the idea of people say just detox her. I'm like, the law doesn't allow that. Like, she can just walk out at any point and say, oh, what am I doing here? I don't want to be here, until they reach a certain point, which is one of the frustrations, and one of the thing that's talked about a bit later in the book. So they sort of trick her and get her to the hospital, because the idea being, like, once the doctors see how bad it is, they have to keep her there. And there is a law that they do have to keep them there if the person is a danger to themselves or others, which she had become.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing, because if we actually do talk about alcoholism at all, or any kind of addiction, and they talk about a therapy or detoxing, and this goes to AA or any of the other therapies, one's willingness has to be there. But in the case of the mother in your book, she can't decide that for herself, and so. It's not there's a lot of paperwork. You talk in early part of the book about this folder that she has of all these papers, like the power of attorney and the sort that Cassie has to bring with her everywhere, and she looks through, right?
Yeah, it's just maddening, because it's often when you are calling and speaking to a detox facility and they're explaining it to you with the infinite patience of you saying, oh, it's like diabetes. If they have an illness, they have to take care of it themselves. But if somebody is at a point where they're in a full state of dementia, alcohol-induced dementia, they don't really have that power. So there's kind of I think that this giving a person full autonomy is a response to the years when women were locked up against their will and thrown in institutions and such. And so in that sense, it's a correction, but perhaps an overcorrection if you can't get somebody the help that they need when they are really not able to do it themselves. So it was tricky, but yeah, there are legal things that you can do to accelerate that, but those are also cumbersome and challenging. So there's no easy way to do it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's the book also reads it as almost visceral reaction reading the book in certain parts, because the way you describe certain feelings that Cassie has as she's thinking about what it was like growing up, or even in the moments that we meet her early in the book. The smells and the feelings in the pit of the stomach and the sort. I mean, you describe that incredibly well. We also meet in the early part of the book her brother Jack, and I'm trying to remember now, because it's been a few days since I read the book, read as much of the book as I could. There's another brother, is that right, Oliver?
Yes, that's correct.
We don't meet him, do we, in the first part, do we?
Not in part one.
Yeah. So it was the three of them growing up, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
What kind of upbringing was it? Because I'm at the part of the book now where we're looking back to Cassie's childhood.
It was fantastic. I think that was partly what compelled me to write the book. Well, part of it was I began writing it. I was doing my thesis at Concordia, and I had a whole different project in mind, and this just happened to be going down, and I was documenting what was happening, because I knew I would forget it, because obviously the mind weeds out unpleasant things, and I didn't want to forget. I wanted to, keep a log of it, and at a certain point I just said, actually, this is what I need to be writing. But partly what was so what drove me was that I know so many women who are, like my mother, just brilliant. Like, my mother was an incredible woman and so creative. And we, you know, growing up, we were the envy of all our friends because they're like, oh, your mom is so cool. You know, she knows all, like, she talked politics and built, like, she was a builder and an architect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we lived in this house that she had renovated from the ground up, and then ultimately she began building her own houses, and we took from that incredible creativity and freedom, but as is sort of one of the catchwords of our generation, boundaries. Mm. She didn't have much in the way of boundaries, so that is something I, you know, have learned a lot about. But I think with everything, there's some to be careful with the psychology, because that's where so much of, I think, our creativity, my brothers and myself and our thinking, and is a result of the way that we were brought up. So, and it was, I guess, the discrepancy between who she was in her great years to mm-hmm. to what happened as a result of the addiction.
Do the characters in the book, Jack and Cassie, do they have different conceptions as to who Nina was as a mom?
I'm sure, just because, you know, they're all different people, but in the end, there is a bit of them trying to sort of compare notes, and there was no disagreement about the fact that, like, there was something that, these days we might give it, there might be like it's borderline personality or it's narcissistic uh-huh. personality or there's probably some label for it, but she would have these really dark moods, or you would say something that would set her off and she wouldn't speak to you for, like, she had this, I at one point in the book compare her to this, there's a book my daughter has with these holographic pages, and one page there's like a lion standing there, and then you flip the page a little and a lion starts roaring, and it was a little bit like that. Like, she was mostly great, but if you touched a wrong spot, uh-huh. It would just go pitch black really fast. So we all knew that was, yeah. We would call them mom's moods. And if the vacuum cleaner was on, just don't even go anywhere near the house. Like that. There was, yeah. like certain things that we all shared, but uh-huh. whether I'm sure we had a different relationships to her and views of her, but there were definitely things we agreed on. Came to the same feelings about.
Yeah, there's a moment early in the book where Cassie asks Jack if she was always an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And I, you know, because they're adults at this point, to even mm-hmm. ask that question, one wonders why. You know what I mean? But like, couldn't you have, understood that already? But I guess that's a difficult thing about alcoholism, because the person who's addicted can hide it so well.
Yeah. And I think there's the person that's addicted can hide it so well, and women can also hide things quite
yeah,
well.
The kids can too, right?
Yeah, yeah. So there was kind of looking back and going, well, something wasn't wrong. Was she always drinking this much? And, she was running like we had a farm, a full-functioning farm, and she wasn't, certainly nowhere near what she was drinking at the end. There wasn't that happening, but she definitely had wine with dinner.
Yeah. What is Cassie's life like in Montreal?
Cassie is raising her daughters and living her life. And the tricky part in creating the character of Cassie was, like, she's the narrator, but she's not exactly, they're sort of co-protagonists or something, mm-hmm. like really wanted to make her a character that had agency, that she wasn't just always responding to Nina, but ultimately the book's about Nina, about Cassie's relationship to Nina, and Cassie is the teller of the story, but the story's about Nina. So things like, what is Cassie's life in Montreal? And these kinds of questions, it was really, really helpful for those questions to have an editor to kind of say, in the beginning, in that first part, there's something where the doctors have asked her to write a profile of the patient. Mm-hmm. And then we use that as kind of a guide to what was included or not included in the final draft. Like, is this something that she would have wanted to document as explaining why Nina is the way Nina is? And if it veered too far off into Kathy's life, it had nothing to do with Nina, then it was cut. It wasn't part of the final draft. But at the same time, we need to know enough about Kathy to actually listen to her. So it was a balance, I guess.
Yeah, one of the things, and this is a theme that you obviously explore throughout the book, is letting go, dealing with loss. Cassie has to contend with the fact that they have to admit her in this hospital, this facility, and she and Jack have a hard time doing that. And then, as we learn, Cassie's got two kids, one who's going overseas shortly. And so there's that letting go as well.
Yeah, that's another aspect that I really feel viscerally, but it's also compelling to me, is this generational thing, whether in my, I'm a woman, it's mother-daughter, and but also, like, we see in larger scale in whole communities, the passing on of trauma from one generation to the next to the next, or the younger generation is turning, like in the case of Cassie and Nina, and then also Nina's mother, Cassie's grandmother, like the who's the mother, who's the daughter, and those roles switch at certain point in life and then flip back sometimes, and the kind of layering and confusion, or confusion is not the right word, but the blend of those things is really interesting, and I think we see it everywhere, and large and small scale.
Yeah, it is. So a lot of this novel comes from personal experience. In terms of writing the book and having to sort of relive a lot of what's happened to you recently and in the past, what does that feel like? Does that feel like a catharsis in a way, or does it feel painful having to go through some of those moments again?
That's a hard question. Because I went through it with this writing, I feel that it helped me a lot. And in the looking at from a, I guess the flip side, like how did it affect the writing? The beginning, like there was an early draft, because I did this for my thesis for Concordia, so there was like 130-page sketch, I guess I would call it, which I had submitted, defended, like just after I admitted my mom to hospital. So I was still really, really angry and really sad, and there was so much emotion, and I couldn't really step back from it at all. And I think my advisor very gently suggested that, and wisely now in retrospect, that maybe a year or some time to like look back over it and come back to it might be helpful. And just as it does take a long time to write a book, it has been, it was 2018 that she went into a facility. So it took that time, but I'm so happy that I did actually take the time, because then I look back, I'm like, oh my God, you're so angry. Like, and that needs to be there to a certain extent, but God, I would not want to myself read a book in which the author was angry the whole way through, unless that was the intent of, explicit intent of the book. But anyway, so I think that from my point of view and how it helped me, yes, I think that it really helped me kind of work through it and be able to kind of almost like be in dialogue with her or something. And then from the book's point of view, I'm glad that I took the time to have some perspective.
So how did you find the time to take it all down as it happened?
Well, I was at night, I guess, in the mornings, like I would take trips up, because I do have two kids, and this is, I think, what resonates for a lot of people. I guess they call it the sandwich years, when your own kids are needing you, but then your parents start to need you, and you're sandwiched in there. I have two kids that were still, you know, very much needing their mother, and I had to fly out to New Mexico every 5 weeks, roughly, for a couple of days. And so the writing took place like I would be doing tasks, trying to help her from morning till night. And then at night I would write down, you know, stuff that had happened. And some of it was just fully practical. Like I needed to remember what the neurologist said or et cetera, et cetera. But, some of it was, for myself.
Yeah. So this book takes place in New Mexico, or Nina is in New Mexico. If she was in Canada, would the paperwork, the legalities of it all, would that be any different?
I'm not 100% sure what the laws are on detoxing. I'm pretty sure you can't. The person still has to have their
some level of consent, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Unless your guardian, a legal guardian, which is a whole process in itself. I think it's pretty similar. I think it would be pretty much the same. But often you can get that consent. Often if a person is not too far gone,
right,
and you say you do an intervention and you know, that can get that. It doesn't mean, it's really true, like in defense of all the facilities that turn us away, like if the person doesn't want to do it, it won't work. Like they'll go in for 3 days and you'll get the alcohol out of their system, and a week later they'll be back, you know, buying wine. So it's true, like it they do need to be part of that decision, but in the case of my mother, when we knew she was going to end up in a facility, like we just wanted to help her.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I was thinking about, because a lot of what I've read of the book so far takes place in the United States, is how much cheaper booze is there than it is here.
So, how much cheaper, that's true.
I mean, we all say that as Canadians, don't we, whenever we have to cross the border and we're coming back, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Because a lot of this is from your own experience, from your own life, what was the editing process like? Because you had all this material that you'd written down as it was happening. Crafting the narrative, the fictional story, if you will, the novel. Was that hard to do in terms of having to go from, say, your own experience and now these characters that you've created in the book?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say I'm so, so thankful for my editor, Siobhan Hearn, and I'm so glad that I'm so lucky. I submitted this to the Anansi open portal they have once a year. I just put it on, you know, their website says submit your manuscript here, and I submitted it, and that she was able to see the novel within what I had. And it was mostly there, but there was large parts that she took out, and it just reads so much better without those parts. They really were not helping. They were muddying the story that I was trying to tell, and she was able to see that and gently help me extract those. So, she was really, I think, I got it down to something that, was enough that it drew her attention. But she helped me a lot with the editing.
What was it like for you as the writer? I mean, having to take up parts of your own life, your own story, if you will. I mean, did you get proprietary about the writing at all during the editing process?
You know what? On a line level, there are certain things where it would be necessarily not perfectly grammatically correct, but I'm just like, that's how, for instance, I wanted, you know, the character of Nina's voice is very particular, and there's certain words in there that are made up that are just words that she always said, which we had to pass, you know, through the editor, the copy editor, just mostly on a line level, I would say that by and large, her suggestions on the large structural level, I took almost all of them. And there weren't like, there was like one huge major cut, and it was painful. It was really, but it was right in retrospect. I'm like, yep, she's right. This belongs somewhere else. It's good writing. I love it. I love the content of it, but it doesn't belong in this. So. It's still sitting there somewhere on my computer. Maybe it'll make an appearance.
Well, what can you say in fiction that you couldn't say in a memoir or a piece of writing that was say, nonfiction about everything that's happened to you?
Yeah, it's sort of an interesting question, and that was a big question in defending the thesis, like why is it not memoir? And part of that is I don't know how to say not really my job to define, but because I just wanted to write something that was true for me, but then I wanted it to read like a novel. I wanted to write something that was artistically like that had causality, and one part inevitably led to the next, and the reader was compelled. And with memoir, every bit of it has to be true. And while there's every bit of this substantively is true, there are things that I did, for instance, in New Mexico. My mom probably has about four or five friends mm-hmm. who helped us. And there was just too many side characters, so I amalgamated them into one person. And, for instance, in real life, when I went to pick my mother up, the sort of horrible boyfriend who comes in later in the novel was there, but I didn't want to introduce him right off the bat. I wanted to introduce him later, so I sort of extracted him from that scene. And I made little choices like that, and I shaped, there's a couple places where there's fully made up people, not really important to her life, but mm-hmm. just that helped me. So little things I did like that, that were crafting. I don't think you're allowed to do that in memoir. So it's very close to memoir, maybe, but I also really wanted something that moved like a novel. I'm not 100% sure. I still am not 100% sure the answer to that question, if it's autofiction or. But I wanted it to read like a novel, and I hope that it does.
It is
true.
It is novel, and it's a very fine piece of art. And wow. I can't wait to finish this book. Congratulations on it, and good luck with it. I so appreciate your time today, Sabrina. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much, Joseph. I had a great time talking to you, too. I appreciate it.
The website for more is at sabrinareeves.com. The book is called Little Crosses. It's published by House of Anansi Press. Its author, Sabrina Reeves, joined me on the line from Montreal and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.